This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Power Lunch with Laura Bennett.
Hello, good to be back with you again. Let me ask you something. Do you consider yourself creative? So often it's a word that we only reserve for those who sing or dance or paint, and maybe those who are always late. They use the excuse that it's because they're quote-unquote creative. I feel like I'm a little bit creative. I like to make things, write things, do sing a little bit as well. But then I'm also very organized. And I know that that is at odds with the idea of these really messy, kind of chaotic personalities that people tend to associate with creativity. But personally, I use my organization skills to bring focus and a little bit more clarity to some of the thoughts and the chaos that, yes, does happen inside every now and again. Musician and author Stephen Roach is the founder of the Breath and Clay Conference and host of the Makers and Mystics podcast. Stephen believes God designed all of us with an innate creativity and that it's crucial to connecting to God more deeply. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do you personally define creativity?
I often say that creativity is more of a quality rather than a talent. And I tell people, half joking and half serious, you know, if you say, well, I'm not one of those creative types, I tend to think that's bad theology. You know, but for me, the creative part of who we are is such a foundational part of what it means to be human. And, you know, I think the way that we run our businesses, the way that we set our table, the way that we love our family and take care of the environment, all of those things are creative. And it's not just something reserved for the fine arts, although the arts are usually where you most pointedly see creativity at work. And I think that's why some people would think that art and creativity are synonymous.
I guess it's because they're obviously a very visual medium, and if it's with music, there's an experience there that the audience and those that look at it can really be part of. But a lot of people express many things through art, but from the Christian perspective, I think a lot of us are really mindful of how our creations can really reflect God. What connection do you see between art and the character of God?
People ask me that a lot, and, you know, I think just playing off the title of my own podcast, Makers and Mystics, you know, I think the path of the maker and the path of the mystic is one and the same, in that, you know, healthy spirituality will always be expressed creatively, and then I think all creativity leads us to a spiritual experience, some people may say a transcendent experience or an encounter with God. And pulling from the scriptures, you know, the first five words of the Bible are, in the beginning, God created, you know. And so our first introduction to the God of the universe is an artist enraptured in a creative process, you know. And then when we get only 26 verses into the story, when we meet humanity in Adam for the first time, the first thing we learn is that we're created in the image of this creator. And so it's a very foundational part of what it means to be human. So for me, creativity and art are very inseparable from the spiritual experience.
It's a really nice way to look at it, that like not only does our creativity connect to the fact that we're made by God and made in his image, but that we be creative as a way of getting to know him better and getting to understand God more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I no longer make a distinction between my prayer time and my practice time. And, you know, because I'm a musician and also a writer, of course, and I find that sometimes my writing process or my creative process tends to be my worship. And then likewise, my worship times always inspire me to create.
Because you're taking that time, I suppose. And you do create art in a lot of different spaces, whether it's in media or music or as a writer. What do you personally enjoy about getting to create things?
That's a great question. For me, I'm just a happier person when I create. And I think my wife would attest to that. But it's one of those things that's hard to put into words, because it's just a very natural, almost unconscious process for me. To create is just part of what it means for me to live life, the same as eating or breathing. It's almost instinctual, I think.
Do you think that routine blocks creativity? Because a lot of people would feel like they have something to create or would love to experience that space, but we are very locked into routine. And in some jobs, of course, you're sitting at a computer 9 to 5. You don't necessarily feel creative. So do you feel like there's something else you need to do to stir that creativity up?
Sure. You know, I think routine can either work for us or against us. And I think that both routine and then also having breaks from that routine are important. And I do work with a lot of people who they are in a situation where they're either working, you know, a 9-to-5 job or they're a full-time stay-at-home mother. And they're like, well, this is great. You're talking to me about creativity and these spiritual experiences. But how does that work for me when the kids are going crazy and I'm exhausted? You know, how does this work? And so for me, one of the things that I talk about is how to cultivate discovering wonder in the midst of the mundane, and how sometimes, even for me, I found myself, because I actually ran a window cleaning and a pressure washing business for about 12 years. You know, people always laugh when I tell them that. But I found myself during that time often asking God, just saying, Lord, would you surprise me today? And so often I would find myself having that Jacob experience where it's like, God is in this place and I didn't know it, you know? And so anyway, that's a little bit of a rabbit trail from routine, but I think that for those of us that are in that type of rhythm, it is important to take breaks from that, to get out of the norm. But then I think on the other hand, it's very important to cultivate healthy routines that actually work for us.
Well, definitely, because I feel like the reputation of a creative is always synonymous with some kind of disorder and fray, and right. A creative is never going to be on time for the coffee date. But I really feel like in some ways that's so limiting, because, like, personally, I use a sense of order and my diary to help channel my creativity and keep me focused, because otherwise I think your mind would just get so messy. So then you think, oh, if I'm organized, am I not creative?
Right. It's so true. And the more that I've talked with artists in the work that I'm doing on the podcast, the more that I've discovered that really healthy routine and discipline and order is much more part of their creative process than the stereotypes would tell us, you know?
It's nice to believe that there is, and see that there is actually that departure. There's that option. You can kind of choose your own adventure. But when it comes to stirring up the creativity within you, if you are somebody who's been very disconnected from anything that feels like artistic expression, how do you think you can stir up your gifts in that area and really know what they are?
I think it's important that we feed ourselves with things that are inspiring to us. And whether that is, you know, a lot of times for me, if I want to be inspired to write a poem, then I go and I just feast on other poets, you know. Or if that's not working, maybe I'll watch a movie that's an inspiring documentary or a film or something. Or sometimes for me, just physical activity, getting outside and running, taking a run, always clears my mind and ends up inspiring me. You know, and then for visual artists or for musicians, a lot of times just listening to these things. It's the same thing with any physical activity. You know, we have to feed ourselves. What we put in is kind of what's going to come out.
Yeah, it's very good advice. And one of the other barriers that a lot of creatives face, particularly if they're wanting to monetize their craft, which I guess is the dream in a lot of ways, is managing that tension between the soul of creativity and the business side, which you've talked about recently on your podcast. So what's your approach to working between the two?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I do think that is where so many of us are. But I'm learning that it's really different for different people. And one thing that I'm careful to tell folks is that being a professional does not validate your art necessarily. And then not being a professional does not invalidate your art. You know, I know some artists who are exceptional artists, but they actually don't want that to be their full-time gig, because once it crosses over into that business world for them, it takes on a new responsibility in their life. And but there are a lot of us, myself included, who do aspire for the creative to become our livelihood. And again, I think in that it really comes down to remaining authentic in your expression, and then at the same time, being willing to work in a certain culture or in society in different patterns or in different ways than maybe what you would that you would normally expect. And in other words, like, I know some of my friends who are musicians, they'll do like wedding gigs, but their true passion is to write their own original scores, you know. Or for photographers, the same way. A lot of times they'll work in the world of wedding photography as their business, but then for their kind of creative release, they're out taking pictures of nature or finding these things. So it's really just finding what works for you that keeps the creative well flowing, and then also gives you an access point to work in society.
And if you can see some of those jobs, like doing the wedding gigs or taking photos of things you don't really want to be taking photos of, like if you can see those as something that is a pathway and a backbone for you to be able to pursue the creative things that are really your passion, then you probably look at it a little bit different. Like, it's not a failure to have to do those sorts of things if they give you a pathway to do the stuff you really want to be doing.
Absolutely. It serves the greater vision. And that's my point exactly.
One of the challenges, I guess, too, is that we all experience lulls in inspiration. And perhaps you've kind of touched on this with running outdoors and all of those sorts of things. But what do you recommend for regaining vision and regaining determination, too?
One thing that we often overlook is the power of rest. And I know that that's something that I'm learning in my own life, is that Sabbath really is an important thing. And sometimes just giving ourselves a break and kind of clearing the palate and resetting always helps inspiration for me. And like I did mention earlier, feasting on these things that are inspiring to us, or challenging yourself to go outside of what's familiar to you and encountering other things. I often read authors that I know that I don't necessarily agree with, because it challenged me to think differently and to engage certain questions from a different perspective. So I think those things are important. Feeding on lots of different perspectives and then allowing yourself times of rest.
And letting your mind wander. There's something so nice about that.
Yes. Yes, the holy daydream.
So true. And I know, I mean, we've spoken a lot about the experience of the artist, the person wanting to create and the person wanting to make things. But art obviously connects with an audience and the person who sees it, reads it, or listens to it. What do you think the role of art is to the masses? And particularly in this day and age, there's so many conversations happening around the world. What kind of contribution do you think art makes to the world around us?
I think that's a wonderful question. And I think that on a very basic level, the contribution that art makes is that it calls us to see things from a different perspective. It invites us to go outside of the norm and to recognize that there is something other that maybe we should encounter. And I, you know, talking about the audience and the viewer and the listener, I tend to think that the person viewing the art or listening to the song is as much a part of the creative process as the one who created it. So for me, art is not complete until it's connected with an audience. And so that goes back to your initial question about people that don't think they're creative. I think the people responding to art are just as much part of the creative process as the artist. And so honestly, I think, you know, what art does is that it creates a bridge between the more abstract or the spiritual or the invisible interior parts of who we are and then the physical world that we live in. I think art gives us a bridge between those two. And for me, that's why art and faith are so interconnected, is that they both call us to consider the more transcendent or spiritual aspects about life. And I think that's important.
It's also, as you said that, it also just makes me think of the fact that even if the person looking at the picture, for instance, isn't aware on a conscious level, subconsciously they become creative, because if that art inspires them to do something, have a conversation, take action, or whatever it might be, they have then by default become creative because they've changed their behavior.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that happens more than people realize.
Yeah.
You know, you may know the Catholic worker Dorothy Day from back in the 1960s. She was in America, and she often worked with the poor. She often worked in very dismal environments with people that were really struggling. And part of her ministry is she said, we want to put portraits of beautiful things on the walls. And she would create these environments of art and beauty because it actually lifted the morale of the people that she was working with. And so it's true that beauty really plays a fundamental role in the health of the human being. I tend to tell people, and this is a quote from John Muir, and he said, well, you know, we need places to play in and pray in. Mm. It's like there's something about beauty that nourishes the soul in much the same way that food nourishes the body.
Right. And it sounds so romantic to imagine that kind of world, but when you get to the practical reality of it, we do live in such a noisy world, and the person consuming the art has seen so many other pictures, heard so many other songs, read so many other books, etc., in the same time that they've seen whatever the creative has made. How do you think you can cut through in such a noisy environment and personally cultivate creativity when there's so much noise around you?
You know, for me, one of my core values is authenticity. And, you know, I think that as we are true to who God's made us to be, and as we are true to the vision of what God has put in our heart, we're going to be original without trying to be original, you know. And I think that that, for me, is one of the primary differences. Because there is so much noise, because there is so much out there, it's important to have that rootedness in authenticity. But again, one other thing that I would add to that is I tend to say to a lot of people that I work with that creativity begins in contemplation. Creativity begins in that secret place of devotion and stepping away from the noise. And I think it was, if you know the author of The Little Prince, that book, the children's book, The Little Prince, you know, he said that the moment that one person contemplates in a rock pile a cathedral, it's no longer a rock pile. And I think that it begins from that place of contemplation for me as a follower of Jesus, in that place of prayer and of worship. When we engage the creative from that place, then we can begin to see cathedrals born out of rock piles.
Gosh, I like that. It's so beautifully expressed, and that just encourages so many people, I think, to imagine it like that. And in your book, Five Creativity Killers and How to Avoid Them, you talk specifically about this, I would say, sort of divide sometimes between faith and also art and how toxic that can become. Can you expand a little bit on that and tell us what your experience in that space has been?
Absolutely. You know, and it's funny, my wife is a wonderful editor, and she edited this book for me. And the chapter you're referring to is a chapter on religion. And so a lot of people were like, whoa, you're doing a chapter on religion as a creativity killer? Tell me about this. What do you mean? She made me rewrite it five times before I could publish it.
You need her in your life.
That's right. That's right. But no, in that chapter, I make a distinction between childlike faith and man-made religion. And for me, the religion that, and I share a story in there about the painter Veronese. And Veronese was commissioned by the Catholic Church at the time to do a painting of the Last Supper. And he did this painting that involved a depiction of the Last Supper in a Roman Parthenon with midgets and dogs and men drinking wine and flamboyant costumes and jugglers and just all kinds of things that on the naked eye would have seemed, could have seemed blasphemous, you know, or it could have seemed very disrespectful or doctrinally incorrect. And there in the midst of this carnivalesque, chaotic scene, you have Jesus right in the middle of all this. And so, of course, he got brought before the trial of the Inquisition. But what I put forth in the book is let's rethink that idea. And is that not the story that the gospel has given us? Is that right in the midst of the chaos of the human experience, of our human life, here's Jesus offering communion in the midst of all of the chaos. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it actually speaks a much deeper truth about the gospel rather than threatening it. And sometimes in our religious circles or in our religious practices, we get very scared of things that are avant-garde or surreal or things that are not linear or immediate to us. And so my point is that, you know, we have to allow the artist to think outside of traditional boxes. We have to allow the artist somewhat of creative license to interpret and to engage the Gospels from a different perspective. And so for me, when Jesus says, you know, unless you become like a little child, you'll not see the kingdom. And so part of that becoming like a little child is being able to see things all new, all things new, being able to see things for the first time. When I look at my children and everything is brand new for them, they're engaging life for the first time. Everything is full of wonder. And I think that's important for us, both as artists and as spiritual practitioners, is to engage everything from that childlike place of wonder. Sometimes religion doesn't allow us to do that because it's already ticked all the boxes and it's already told us how we're supposed to think about these things. And so those things can sometimes create tension between the artist that wants to explore new ideas and for the religious person who wants to make sure we've got all the right doctrine. And just to be clear, sound doctrine is very important to me as an artist and as a person of faith. You know, so I'm not arguing creative license against sound doctrine. We need sound doctrine. We need better sound doctrine.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
That's a different, yeah, you know. But I think that they're not over against one another. Being able to come to a place of rooted in sound doctrine actually allows me to become playful and to play with ideas and to go outside the box, if that makes sense.
It does. And if you do imagine that connection with the childlike faith, yes, kids take on things sort of straight away. Like if you're talking to them about the gospel, they go, oh, that's cool. And they listen and they take it on board. But they also ask 1,000 questions and are curious and want to know how bits fit together and why Jesus did that and all of those sorts of things. So I feel like that does give you permission to stick with the core truth, but also to look at it in different ways and be curious about it and ask questions.
Absolutely. And that, for me, is really what art is meant to do. Art is not so much to provide the answers, but to help us ask the questions.
That is so well said, Stephen. Thank you so much for your time today and having a chat with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
That is it for this week's Power Lunch. Thank you for listening. Would love for you to subscribe, rate it, share it with your friends, and let me know what you think. Until next time, see you later.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.